welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark LeVunier. Stay tuned for an hour of crime. Coming up later on, we hear Nightbeat from 1950, but right now it's The Whistler, a broadcast from CBS from July 6th, 1952, called Triple Play.
I know many strange tales
hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for The Whistler, rated by independent research, the most popular West Coast program in radio history.
Whistler's strange story, Triple Play.
On the morning that a cool, distinguished-looking gentleman stepped from his limousine and made his way to the mayor's office at City Hall, casual onlookers would scarcely have suspected that an era in city government was drawing to a close. The gentleman was Daniel Cobb, known to insiders as the city's political boss. To the average person as owner and publisher of the city's largest newspaper, The Star. And the future looks unusually bright to you, doesn't it, Dan? As you stop at the desk of the mayor's attractive and gracious secretary, Patricia Wolcott.
Well, Patricia, is the mayor in?
Yes, Dan. Shall I tell him you're here?
Oh, I can wait a few minutes. You know, I shouldn't come up here at all.
Oh, why not?
Your beauty is simply overwhelming. I won't get a stitch of work done all day.
Oh, Dan.
Stupid of me, I know, to fall in love with a woman half the city is pursuing.
Not if she's the right woman.
Is she?
She doesn't know yet, for sure.
When do you suppose she will know?
In the fullness of time. Now, I have work to do.
All right, but don't forget who you're having dinner with tonight.
How could I?
Shall we take in that new play at the Globe afterward?
Wonderful. I'll expect you at 6, hmm? Now, I better tell Leslie you're waiting. Mr. Cobbs is here to see you.
Send him in.
Dan, you going to tell him?
Yes, but don't worry about Leslie. He'll take it all right. See you later, darling. Well, how's our mayor this fine morning?
Never felt better. What can I do for you, Dan?
I'll get right to the point. Don't have much time. I'm meeting my editors this morning at 11.
Shoot.
It's this way. I'm announcing your retirement from public office this evening in the last edition of The Star.
Why, you can't be serious.
I am. You're not running in the next election because you're tired of public life, Leslie, and are eager to get back to some real living on your farm.
Oh, but I don't understand. I've played ball with you, haven't I?
That's not the point. No complaints, but frankly, there is a man I'd prefer to see as mayor.
Who's that?
Myself.
Oh, I see.
Well?
Yeah, I'll step aside, naturally. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for you, but... Well, you thought this over carefully, Dan?
Of course I have.
Yeah, Stump Reynolds is going to be running against you. I don't like to say this, but you won't have much of a chance against Stump.
I'll take care of Stump Reynolds, Leslie. All you have to do is get out there and give me your support without any hedging.
Yes, I'll welcome the opportunity. I'll do everything I can for you, Daniel.
I trust you will. Oh, by the way, I wish you'd see to that reception room before election. It's as cheerful as a tomb. I'd like to have it redecorated before I move in. You could cover those atrocious wire glass windows with some deep red drapes, and a soft gray would do nicely for the walls.
Anything else?
Yes. I'd like to have the floor done in aquamarine.
Aquamarine?
That's right, aquamarine. A little unusual, but I like it.
Okay, I'll place the contract. I admire your self-confidence, Daniel.
I bet you do. But whether you like it or not, I go after what I want. And I get it.
The moment of decision is past, isn't it, Dan? You're moving into the limelight on your own. Yes, the puppet master is stepping out on the stage. But as you break the news that you're running for mayor to your editorial board later that evening, you're seized with fear and wonder at what would happen if you lost. That's the one thing you could never face, isn't it, Dan? Defeat. But you manage to thrust aside your fears and bark out instructions to your staff.
Quincy, you're in charge of publicity. I want stories in every edition. Partner, you'll handle the business end of this campaign, and by heaven's sake, don't count pennies. Harrison, mark this carefully.
Yes, sir.
I have to beat Stump Reynolds. No one else matters. I want you to take three of your best reporters and go out and get me the dirt on Reynolds. No scandal is too big or too small, understand?
Perfectly, Mr. Cobb.
Good. Well, that's all for today, gentlemen. Let's get started.
All right, boys.
The campaign is underway. There's no turning back now, is there, Dan? The headlines, stories, and pictures announcing your candidacy are all over the evening edition of the Star. And you're a little jittery when you first pick up Patricia. Take her to dinner at your club. But gradually, her beauty and warmth reassure you. And as the evening wears on, you become more confident. After the theater, you stop by her apartment for a drink.
I've heard about Stump Reynolds, Dan, but what about this other man that's running? What's his name, Coleman?
John Coleman, yes. Don't worry about poor John. He's always running.
Well, I gather he's not much competition.
A very poor third. Simple, honest John, they call him. I believe he teaches political science at the college.
Oh.
Patricia, not to change the subject, I'd like to ask you something.
You're being very serious suddenly.
I mean to be.
No, Dan, please. Dan, you shouldn't have done that.
Why not?
I said in the fullness of time, remember?
I'm in love with you. You know that.
Yes, but I want you to wait.
I'm not sure that I can, Patricia.
Then we'd better not see each other for a while.
When will you know?
Can I take a rain check until after the election? You're going to be busy campaigning.
So that's what you're waiting for. To see if I'm the next mayor.
I think you ought to know, Dan. I don't like myself for it, but I'm a very ambitious woman.
Don't worry. I'll win.
Are you very angry with me?
Yes, I am. But I can't blame you. I play to win. Why shouldn't you?
I'm glad you see it that way, Dan, because that's what I'm doing. Playing to win.
Now you're more anxious than ever to be elected mayor, aren't you, Dan? Because you're certain that your election will also mean your marriage to Patricia Wilkins. And Patricia means more than anything in the world to you, doesn't she, Dan? The more you think about Reynolds, the more worried you become. You must head him off. And a few days later, you arrange to meet him at a small cafe close to the city hall.
Anything more, sir?
No, that's fine, thank you. Stump?
I'm satisfied. Now, what do you want, Dan?
I'm a blunt man myself, and I like a blunt man.
We can dispense with the posies.
All right, Stump. What did you take to pull out of the race for mayor?
Well, I've never been mayor. I wouldn't know what it's worth. Suppose you tell me.
Shall we say an appointment as political editor of the Star, $15,000 a year, a 10-year contract?
4 years ago, Dan, you double-crossed me and switched to Leslie Bryan. You remember that?
Oh, nothing personal, Stump. Politics is a rough game.
That cuts two ways. This time I'm going to get the personal satisfaction of beating the head man myself.
You're making a mistake.
Let's see what happens at the finish line.
You're going to have a fight on your hands, Stump. And I don't play Marcus at Queensbury's rules. It'll be a dirty campaign, and before I'm through, you'll be smeared right out of the state.
Okay, Dan. But don't forget to pick up the tab. This lunch is on you.
Now, back to the Whistler. The campaign is in full swing now, isn't it, Dan? But beneath all your claims of a landslide victory at the polls, the cold fear of defeat is gnawing at you. Stump Reynolds' refusal to be bought off is the big worry. And you're increasingly aware of his threat to your success. Then the all-important speech before the Northside Community Club occurs. John Coleman makes the opening speech. He gets some scattered polite applause. And Stump Reynolds steps to the speaker's rostrum. You scarcely listen to Reynolds as you watch the audience. See their reactions as he sums up his stand in a daring, shocking
ladies
statement.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me promise you that if I am elected mayor, the first thing I'll do is run Boss Cobbs and his crooked organization right out of the city hall and into the city jail. And then I'm going to sweep this town clean of the gangsters and the grafters and the gamblers. A vote for me is a vote for honest government.
Following your introduction, which is received with a mere ripple of applause, you step to the speaker's rostrum with fists clenched and ready to fight back.
Ladies and gentlemen, honored guests, it is a pleasure to be here this evening among my many friends and readers. Most of you have known me for many years and know how I have always fought for good government and the best interests of our city.
You do your best, but the rest of your speech doesn't go well, does it, Dan? And as you leave, you're sure defeat is staring you in the face. The next morning, you know it's even worse as you face the leaders of your own organization at an emergency meeting.
Do you still figure on beating Reynolds, Dan?
I'll beat him yet, Charlie. I know I will.
You can make yourself a chunk of money, Dan. The bookies are giving 5-1, you lose.
I know. Bookies and polls have been wrong before.
Eh? You're the boss, Dan. What you say goes. We all think you ought to pull out and run Leslie Bryan for re-election.
I want a little more time, boys. I'll get something on Reynolds, some dirt. I promise you I'll find a way to beat him.
You don't sleep at all well that night, do you, Dan? And as much as you bully your reporters during the next few days, they can pin nothing of consequence on Stump Reynolds. Then one evening, as you're nervously pacing back and forth in your downtown apartment, the doorbell rings.
Patricia.
Hello, Dan. I can only stay a minute.
Oh, sit down. Drink?
Yes, thanks. Scotch and water.
I'll fix it right out. You know, I've missed you.
I've missed you, too.
I suppose you're up to date on the campaign.
Yes, that's why I'm here.
Mm. Scotch.
Thanks.
Leslie Bryan sends you with a gentle hint that I quit?
No, good news.
I'd like to hear some.
Leslie's got a tip on Stump Reynolds.
What?
He's found his weak spot. It seems Reynolds can't keep away from the poker and dice table. Once or twice a week, he sneaks away to a small spot on the outskirts of town called the 611 Club.
Are you sure?
Quite sure.
Thank you, Patricia.
Well, don't thank me. Thank Leslie Bryan.
Do that for me, will you? He's been a real friend. Let me get to the phone. I'll talk to you later, darling.
It's only a week later that the 611 Club is raided with Stump Reynolds trapped inside. And you wait outside with a full complement of reporters and photographers.
Police raid. All entrances are covered. Everybody inside, remain where you are.
The police are bringing him out now. Doesn't Stump look dapper in handcuffs? Harrison, get to work.
Yes, sir. Joe, get some shots of him and the cop. Pete, train your limbs on the patrol wagon. Get some pictures of the cop shoving them in. Then follow them down to the city jail. Be sure to get a big one of Reynolds behind bars.
Very good, Harrison, very good. Well, the police are bringing him this way. Hello, Reynolds. Good to see you.
I'll get you for this, cops. I swear.
All's fair in love, war, and politics, Mr. Reynolds.
The next afternoon, you receive the best news of all, don't you, Dan?
It happens while you're celebrating Stump Reynolds' arrest with a few political cronies around the radio at a bar in the lobby of the Star Building, waiting for the announcement you know is coming.
Ladies and gentlemen, a late bulletin from our newsroom. Yes, yes, yes. Mr. Stump Reynolds announced just a few moments ago from his campaign headquarters that he is retiring from the race for mayor. Mr. Reynolds, who was released from jail this morning following his arrest during a gambling raid, was running on a clean government platform. Now, back to our music.
Gentlemen, a toast, gentlemen, to Stump Reynolds and clean government.
For the first time in months, you begin to breathe easy, don't you, Dan? Because everything is coming along fine. And you can daydream of being introduced to cheering crowds as Mayor Daniel Cobb, with Patricia at your side, the beautiful, charming first lady of the city. Then on Monday afternoon, Harrison burst into your office.
Dan, look at these headlines on the Telegram and the Ledger.
What? Daniel Cobb's exposed as wife and child deserter.
Yeah, but listen to this. A suit was filed against Daniel Cobb today in Superior Court by dancer Thelma Evans for $100,000.
Thelma Evans?
Miss Evans charges that the leading candidate in the race for mayor married her under the name of Paul Evans 10 years ago in Mexico City.
What?
And deserted her in 3 months. She demands support of their child.
It's an outrageous, libelous lie.
What, Dan?
Reynolds. How did you get in here?
I walked in. I wanted to see your face, Dan.
You know it's not true.
I know it's not true, but do the vote.
I'll have this cheap little Thelma Evans in jail for blackmail.
You can't stop anyone from suing you, Dan.
I'm beginning to see whose fine hand is behind all of this.
Well, I'm willing to take part of the credit.
I'm warning you.
You don't like it when the shoe's on the other foot, do you? So long, Dan.
No, wait. I'll admit it. You've got me.
Huh?
You remember that offer I made you, political editor? I'll make it $20,000 a year.
I wouldn't take it if you made it $100,000.
Why, you
remember
jerk.
What you said, Mr. Cobbs? All fair in love, war, and politics?
The opposition newspapers won't let go of Thelma Evans' charges, will they, Dan? And in spite of all your denials, the scandal takes hold and grows. Even some of your own supporters begin to think that where there's smoke, there's fire. Finally, at another emergency meeting.
Well, we've gone along with you as far as we're going to, Dan.
Oh, bosh. The phony charges of a stupid little dancer send you all running for cover? I'll see this thing through.
Alone?
Well, you wouldn't dare dump me now.
Oh, yes, we would. We're drafting Leslie Bryan to run for re-election as the people's choice.
Right.
We expect you to jump on the bandwagon.
So I have no choice. All right, I'll go along.
You withdraw from the race the following day, don't you, Dan? Giving ill health is the reason. Urging your supporters to re-elect Leslie Bryan. And almost immediately, Patricia turns her attention toward him, doesn't she? She's seen everywhere with him. One night, you're having a drink at the bar of the Precinct Political Club when...
Don't you recognize old friends anymore, Dan?
Reynolds, keep away from me.
We both clobbered each other. The score is tied, 1-1.
I don't think so.
Okay, nurse your grudge. But you know, there's something I'd like to know. Who tipped you off about the 6-11 Club?
Why don't you tell me who engineered that cheap lawsuit and dug up that Thelma Evans?
All right. I'll swap.
I don't trust you.
Well, what difference does it make now? We're both dead.
That's so. Well, if you want to know, Leslie Bryan told me.
Leslie
Bryan? Oh, what's so funny?
Leslie Bryan. Leslie Bryan cooked up the Thelma Evans charges.
What?
I shelled out the money, but he hired her and had her flown in from the east.
Oh.
Leslie Bryan didn't think he had it in him.
Bryan. Leslie Bryan. He got us both.
The more you think about it, the angrier you get. And the more you hate Leslie Bryan, The way he made a fool of both you and Stump Reynolds in making almost certain his own re-election. An event which would greatly weaken, if not destroy, your chances of marrying Patricia Wilkett. And now you want Patricia more than ever. Suddenly it hits you. If something happened to Leslie Bryan, the main obstacle to your marriage to Patricia would be removed. And you love her enough to make certain something does happen to Leslie Bryan. Don't you, Dan? As the days pass, you wonder more and more just how to bring this about. And finally a plan begins to take form. You know Leslie Bryan's habits. Know that he completes the routine business of his office in the evening hours when the city hall is deserted and he can work without disturbance. The following Monday evening, you leave your downtown apartment and take a cab to within a few blocks of the city hall. And you pay off the driver and walk the rest of the way. Let yourself in through a rear door left open for janitors and charwomen. Find your way to the mayor's office on the fourth floor without being seen. Then you grope your way through the dark reception room until you find the door to Leslie's private office.
Who's there? Dan, you idiot. What are you doing? Put away that gun.
Sorry, Leslie, but your political career is over.
Return in just a moment with the strange ending to tonight's story. Now, back to the Whistler.
Now that Leslie Bryan is dead, you feel better, don't you, Dan? And you're sure you'll get away with it, aren't you? Mayors of large cities have been assassinated before, and that's what you're counting on, that the police will consider it the work of some fanatic. You're at least certain that they will be slow in suspecting a man of your eminence. And so, Dan, when a detective from headquarters comes to your apartment an hour later, you're in an easy chair, a drink in hand, your feet resting comfortably on the hassock. You're a little surprised to see Patricia Wilkett with the detective, but you don't let it disturb you. You answer all his questions frankly and openly.
You're sure Bryan had no enemies, Mr. Cobbs?
In politics, everybody is your friend and your enemy.
You were an enemy of Leslie Bryan's?
Politically, yes.
But not personally?
No, I wouldn't say so.
What were you doing in his office this evening about the time he was killed?
You're mistaken, officer.
Oh, no, I'm not. I've been looking at the soles of your shoes for the last 5 minutes. There's a lot of paint on them. I don't know a lot about colors, but I'd say it was aquamarine.
So what? That doesn't mean I killed Leslie Bryan.
It does, unless you can explain that paint. The painters were there this evening after the city hall closed at 5, and they left around 8. You must have gotten there about 9. I'm afraid you'll have to come down to headquarters, submit to a paraffin test.
Now, just a minute.
Oh, stop it, Dan. You killed Leslie Bryan, and you know it. Funny you should be caught by the aquamarine paint on the floor. It was you who gave the orders to have it done. Too bad you killed Leslie. You see, I would have stopped his re-election anyway.
You?
Yes, me. He was a crook like the rest of you. I had the goods on him on at least a half a dozen crooked paving and building contracts. I was going to give the story to the newspapers a week before the election.
What's this?
Oh, Dan, you don't really believe that Leslie thought of Thelma Evans or knew about Stump Reynolds' gambling habits?
It was you.
You're catching on. Sorry, Dan, that you won't be able to attend my wedding.
Your wedding?
Yes, I'm going to marry the man I've been engaged to these past 2 years. Simple, honest John Coleman, I believe you called him. The political science professor, remember? Our next mayor.
Thank you.
The Whistler, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 6th, 1952 on CBS. It's an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levinier. And now, Night Beats, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone, is also joined by actress Joan Banks, his wife in real life, for this July 17th, 1950 broadcast from NBC.
Night Beat. On stage tonight, transcribed from Hollywood, Night Beat, another in the Wheaties big parade of exciting half-hour presentations. Night Beat.
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the Night Beat for the Chicago Star. My stories start in many different ways. This one began with greed and fear, and ended when two men started out for murder.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
Tonight, I didn't have to look for my story. It came over the teletype. A few lines of cold, impersonal print that told that a man had died. Charles Keller died today in the state penitentiary. Keller served 14 years of a 20-year sentence for armed robbery. The clacking stopped for a moment, as though the machine were taking a breath. Charles Keller. I thought of his wife, Molly, a quiet, patient woman who worked here in the building, scrubbing floors. Then the teletype started up again, writing a finish to a man's life. Keller died, still denying any knowledge of the $65,000 payroll robbery, a sensation of 14 years ago. Keller's death deepens the mystery of the money, which was never recovered. Well, that was all about Charles Keller. The teletype faded as I walked from the room to the elevator and down to the lobby. Tim, the night watchman, came toward me.
Evening, Mr. Stone.
How are you, Tim?
You're starting out kind of early, ain't you?
I guess so. Where's Molly?
I don't know. When I came out tonight, she wasn't here. Why?
Her husband died today.
Yeah, I heard it. Who's going to scrub the floors if she don't show up?
Who'll scrub the floors? Well, there's the sanitary viewpoint. She didn't send word, sick, or anything like that?
Not that I knew of. She just ain't here, that's all.
Okay. You know where she lives, don't you?
Sure. Now, the first night she's missed in 14 years. Funny, ain't it?
Oh, sure. Very funny. Give me her address. I'd known Molly for as long as I'd worked on the Star. At first, people had pointed her out. Molly Keller, Charles Keller's wife, wife of a convict. But she scrubbed her floors and said nothing. Once a month, she'd go to visit her husband. And then the years passed, and Molly wasn't the wife of a convict anymore. She was just a scrub woman. But now her husband's death would bring it all back. There'd be those awkward attempts to be kind to her. And if I knew Molly, she wouldn't want that. That's why I went to see her.
Help you, mister?
Yes, I think so. Molly Keller lives here, doesn't she?
She ain't here now.
Well, where is she?
What's your name?
Stone, Randy Stone.
Wait a minute. That don't sound like any name she put down.
What?
You said Stone, huh?
Yeah, Stone.
I can't tell you where she is.
What have you got there?
Well, nothing you want. Now you go away. I gotta get some sleep.
Yeah, in a minute. Look, I'm Randy Stone, Chicago Star. Here's my press card.
I don't care about that. Molly gave me $50.
She did what?
Mister, you ain't one of the names, so I can't tell you where she is.
But I'm a friend of hers, and I've got to see her. Her husband died today, and I...
Oh. I didn't know that.
Well, you do now. Tell me where Molly is.
Well, Molly, know about her husband?
I don't know.
Well, okay, but when you see her, don't tell her it was me that told you.
All right. Where is she?
Lake Drive Hotel.
Who? The Lake Drive? Are you sure?
You asked me, I told you. Now that's all.
The Lake Drive Hotel, swank and plush. Visiting royalty had to show their crowns before they could get in. So I went there, I walked through the lobby, past the diamonds and the furs, and up to the desk where a clerk with a Harvard accent and a Vassar personality looked me over.
Front boy. May I help you, sir?
Yes, I think so. I'm looking for a woman named Molly Keller.
Is she registered here, sir?
I don't think so. Molly Keller is, well, she's a scrub lady.
I beg your pardon?
A scrub lady, one of the great army of working people.
I suggest you try the servant entrance.
You forgot the sir.
If you'll excuse me.
Yes, this is important. I want to find Molly Keller.
The servant's entrance?
You're wasting the springtime of your youth repeating that. Now, all you have to do is go to the phone and check with the employees department, find out if there's a Molly Keller working there.
Very well. One moment, please.
Thank you.
Hello. This is the desk. Is there a scrub woman working here named Molly Keller? Thank you.
Well?
There's no one here by that name.
Maybe she used the name Mrs. Charles Keller.
Sir?
Mrs. Charles Keller.
But we have a Mrs. Charles Keller registered here.
Registered?
Certainly, in the Royal Suite.
The Royal Suite? When did she check in?
Really, sir, I cannot give out information about our guest.
Yes, all right. Will you call her, tell her I'd like to see her?
One moment, I must check something first.
I hate to see you patter back and forth on your delicate little feet. What's up now?
Your name, sir?
Stone, Randy Stone.
Well, I'm sorry, sir. That is not one of the names Mrs. Keller gave me.
She gave you a list of names, too?
No one but these three men were to be shown up under any circumstances.
Well, ask her if she'll see me. Randy Stone. She knows me.
Very well, sir. One moment.
The clerk went to the desk phone. I told myself the woman in the royal suite couldn't be Molly Keller. Not at $100 a day, plus tips. I half expected the clerk to come back and tell me Mrs. Charles Keller didn't know me.
Mrs. Keller, there's a gentleman here to see you. No, not one of the three. But he says his name is Randy Stone. Yes, Mrs. Keller, I'll send him up. Mrs. Keller will see you, Mr. Stone. The Royal Suite is 4A. The elevators are in the alcove to your right.
Thank you.
The elevators are...
Oh, thank you. I'll walk up. The air might clear my head.
Oui, monsieur? Oui, monsieur?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Randy Stone, Mrs. Keller.
Oh, oui, monsieur Stone. You will please come in.
Thank you.
I will tell Madame Keller you are here.
All right, Colette. I heard him.
Oui, madame. In there, monsieur. The sitting room.
Thank you again.
Hello, Randy.
Hello, Molly.
Will madame wish me any more?
No, I'll call the service desk when I need you.
Merci, madame.
How'd you find me, Randy?
Did I?
But you're here.
Yeah, I know. I'm here, but are you?
What do you mean?
What do you think I mean, Molly? Or should I say, Madam Keller?
What do you want?
I don't know. What are you doing here?
I live here.
Since when?
I registered tonight.
Uh-huh. That clears up the whole thing. You just walked in here and registered at $100 a day plus a French maid. What is all this?
Please go, will you?
Yeah, in a minute. This came over the teletype about an hour ago.
Charles?
Yeah.
They notified me.
You're not going up there?
Charles is dead. Why should I go up?
Look, there's something wrong. This doesn't make sense. I've known you for a long time. I've watched you. A woman for whom I had a lot of respect because she had a lot for herself.
A woman who broke her back and her hands for 14 years while her husband rotted in prison.
While you stuck by him?
Because I was a fool.
Well, then why didn't you divorce him?
Oh, I couldn't.
You couldn't? Why not?
Please go now. Don't ask any more questions.
Why not, Molly? Why are you afraid to have me ask questions?
What do you want, a story?
No.
Get out.
Molly.
What?
Where are you getting the money for, all this?
It's got nothing to do with you, Randy.
But it has everything to do with you and your husband.
He's dead.
Molly, that money from the robbery, the $65,000.
Leave me alone.
You know where it is, don't you? You've known for 14 years.
You don't know anything about it.
You've got it.
Get out.
Okay, Madam Keller, I'm sorry I called on you. I was looking for Molly Keller. The wrong number. Goodbye.
You're... You're going to the police?
No, I won't have to. Another thing, Molly. I read about the case. There were other men in that robbery. You think they'll stand still and let you get away with this? There were three other men, Molly, and they...
They what?
Those names that you left with the landlord and the clerk.
What about them?
Who are they?
All right, Randy. You want a story? I'll give you one. Here. The names and addresses of three men.
So?
You want a story, and I'll give you one. The biggest you've ever had. A murder story.
Murder?
Yes. You go to these men and tell them about me. Where I am, how I'm living.
If they're who I think they... No, I won't. It'll be your murder, Molly.
No, Randy, not mine.
Then whose?
I promise you, you'll find out before tomorrow.
That was all I got from Molly, a piece of paper with the names and addresses of three men written on it. I left her, I headed for the street, and I walked around thinking. A couple of times I started to toss away that paper, but it stuck to my fingers. A couple of times I headed for the precinct police station and stopped. What did I have? Zero. What could I get? A story, she said. Okay, Molly, let's see. The first address took me to a Harry Campbell, a gimlet-eyed pool hall tout. I interrupted his game.
Newspaper, huh? Well, what gives?
Let's get away from the table.
Say it here, Mr. Stone, ain't it?
Uh-huh.
Okay, go ahead. Nine ball, corner pocket.
This is about $65,000 and Charles Keller. You missed the shot, Harry. It was an easy one.
Yeah. Take my cue, Eddie. I got something to do.
Yeah, sure. Steady.
Okay, you. Come on. Now, what was that you said?
$65,000.
Keep going.
14 years ago, there was a payroll robbery. The money from it was never recovered. Somebody has it, Harry.
Why tell me?
I thought you'd like to know.
Why?
Charles Keller said he didn't get the money.
Oh, now, look, you come in here, give me a fast chorus about 65 G's I don't know nothing about.
But you're interested.
Anybody's interested in that much dough.
That's what I mean.
What's your angle, Stone? How come you found me? How come you knew where to find me?
Molly Keller told me. You don't know her, huh?
No.
Well, I thought maybe you did. Anyway, I interviewed her at her suite at the Lake Drive, and
Where?
The Lake Drive Hotel. She's registered in the Royal Suite, French maid and all. Yesterday, she was scrubbing floors.
You better go, Mr. Stone.
Okay. I'll see you around, Harry.
Yeah. I'll be waiting up for you.
Name number two was Bob Olson. He wasn't home, but I located him in an all-night beanery. He was behind the counter.
What'll yours be, mister?
Coffee.
Sure. Black?
Yeah.
Coffee black. Sugar?
No, thank you, Bob.
I know you.
No, not yet.
How come you know my name?
Bob Olson, that right?
Yeah. How'd you know?
Oh, psychic, or maybe Molly Keller told me.
Huh?
I just come from Harry Campbell.
I don't know him.
Nor Molly Keller?
Never heard of her.
Mm-hmm. You just don't know the right people, Bob, or you'd know all about $65,000. Bob Olson played it straight, too, but there was the same look in his eyes I saw in Campbell's, hard and nasty. I left him with the same information I'd given Campbell. And then I headed for the third name on the list, Jim Humphreys.
Yeah, what do you want, Buster?
I'm looking for Jim Humphreys.
What for?
Is he here?
That depends. Are you a copper?
No, I'm a reporter. Randy Stone, Chicago Star.
What do you want?
You're, Mrs. Humphreys?
So I had bad luck. What do you want?
Who is that, Kitty?
A guy with a tie on. Nobody you'd know.
Oh yeah? Who are you? What's the pitch?
The name is Randy Stone, Chicago Star.
What's a newspaper guy got to talk to me about?
14 years and $65,000.
Jim, what's he talking about?
I don't know yet. Come on in. Kitty.
What?
Get in the other room. Close the door and stay there.
Listen, I want to know what's
Shut
going
up.
On.
Now, go ahead. Get in the other room. Now, what's with you, Stone?
Charles Keller died in prison today. That mean anything?
No, never heard of him.
Never heard of his wife either, huh?
No. Hey, what are you doing?
Looking around. This isn't the best place in the world, is it, Jim?
It's good enough.
One quarter of 65,000 is about 16,000. You didn't get anything, did you?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, everybody is innocent. Olson, Campbell. You know them, Jim?
No.
Well, I guess Molly Keller sent me on a wild goose chase.
Molly Keller?
Yeah, she's living at the Lake Drive. For 14 years, she scrubbed floors while her husband was in prison, but now she's...
Jim!
Get back in there.
I ain't. You heard what this guy says. The Lake Drive Hotel. She's living there.
You flathead, shut your trap.
I won't. Do you hear me?
I'm telling you, get back in that room and stay in there.
Hey, I've been living in this crumb joint. Look at me. Mister, you look at me.
I am kidding.
So I'm ugly.
No,
huh?
Not at all.
No, I ain't. But I gotta live in this trap. Me, I could have had lots of things, but I ain't. I've been taking this guff because he tells me that someday...
Keep it shut, I tell you. Keep it shut.
I've been keeping quiet for long enough. For 5 years, I've been keeping quiet because you told me that someday I...
I told you. Now get out of here. Get in the other room.
Now, wait a minute.
Keep out of this, you. Kitty, you heard me.
Just a bird in a cage. And not a gilded one.
Mister, I don't want to hear nothing else from you. Now, you got a couple of seconds to get out of here before I slap you all over the neighborhood. Now, what do you say?
Oh, it's clear. Okay, so long, Jim.
Come back again, and I'll kill you.
Well, there I had it. Three men who knew about the robbery, who'd like to get their hands on the money, but who had to stay undercover and keep quiet until... Until what? The answer to that lay with Molly Keller, and I wanted the answer. 20 minutes later, I was back at the Lake Drive Hotel. This time, I didn't go to the desk. I slipped through the lobby, up the stairs, and down the carpeted hallway to Molly's suite.
Randy.
Hello, Molly. Want company?
Yeah. Come in.
Oh. You've already got company.
Take it easy, Stone.
Yeah, guns forced me into a sort of composure, Olson. Molly.
Thanks, Randy. Thanks for sending him here.
Sit down again, Molly.
Of course, Harry.
Now, once more, where's the dough?
You expect me to tell you, Bob?
You will or else.
Molly, if you got any sense at all, you'll tell them they can't get away.
I know.
You're crazy. Why did you let them in?
I wanted to. Bob Olson and Harry Campbell and Jim Humphreys. Where's Jim?
Never mind him. Now listen, Molly. You ain't gonna get hurt if you know where the money is.
No.
Molly.
First one, then the other, like two jackals. I knew they'd come, Randy.
Where is it, Molly?
Not yet, Harry. There's still one more to come. Jim Humphreys. When he gets here, I'll tell you.
You'll tell us now.
No. And if you kill me, you'll never find out. Will you? You'll never find out. You had to make a deal with each other. Now wait and make one with Humphreys. Randy.
What do you want?
How long ago did you leave Jim?
20 minutes.
He should be here by now.
We ain't waiting, Molly. We ain't waiting.
Campbell, you...
Stay sitting, Stone. Watch him, Bob.
I am.
Molly, we ain't kidding. We ain't kidding. All right, Molly.
It's no use, Harry. You can do anything you want to do. You won't find out anything until Jim Humphreys gets here.
And there we sat, Campbell, Olson, Molly, and I, and the minutes ticked by. I watched Molly. She never took her eyes off the two men. There was no expression on her face but hate, a bitter hate that could almost be felt. And then...
It's been an hour. We ain't waiting no longer.
All right, Harry. Guess Jim isn't coming.
Molly... You're going to tell us now.
Yeah, I will, Bob.
Stay sitting, Molly.
You want the money, don't you, Harry?
You got it here?
Over there. I'll get it for you.
Go ahead. Bob, watch this guy.
Right.
You waited 14 years for this. 14 years. So have I. All right. Here. Here's the money. Take it. Take it, Harry.
This bank book? What are you giving us?
The money. Take it.
Why, you stinking. This is your bank book and nothing. No money.
14 years of saving for this minute, don't you see? I never had the money. Charles never had it.
Don't give me that. What about this joint?
The money for all this was mine, penny by penny, dollar by dollar. I saved for this moment.
You're lying, Molly. You're
lying. Look at that last withdrawal, Harry. $512 taken out yesterday to pay for this, to bring you out like jackals.
Where's the money, Molly? Where is it?
14 years ago, three men got $65,000 in a robbery, but there was a fourth man who had nothing to do with it. He was framed. Framed by one of the other three.
You're nuts.
No, Bob, just a little smarter than you. The man who framed my husband was smart, too. He made you believe there was a fourth man who got the money and hid it. Now, think back. The money was hidden. Then it disappeared.
You're lying, Molly. You're lying.
Am I? If I'm lying, where's Jim Humphreys? Why isn't he here? You two are, but he isn't, because he knows where the money is. He's got it. He's got it.
Humphreys.
You know where he is.
Yeah, we know where he is.
Well, then, get him. You'll have to kill him, but that won't make any difference, will it? Not for all that money. Get him.
Molly, if this is a frame, so help me, we'll get you.
Find out, Harry. Go to him. Get the money. It's yours, isn't it? Get it. You waited 14 years, afraid to ask, afraid to talk, but now...
What about him? Stone.
He won't stop you. He won't stop you because I won't let him.
Harry, watch her.
He'll stay here. Go ahead, Harry. Bob, I can use a gun, too.
Molly... Molly, this better not be a frame.
You'll find Jim Humphreys and the money.
Come on, Harry.
I guess you would shoot me, wouldn't you, Molly?
If I have to.
And this is my story?
Yeah. Please don't get up, Randy.
You're sending two men out to kill a third. Why?
Because this is what can build up inside of a woman for 14 years.
It'll help your husband, won't it?
Don't come near me, Randy.
So Jim Humphreys will be killed. What about you? You're as much a murderer as they'll be.
And glad of it.
Molly, give me that gun. Let me call the police.
No.
It's not too late.
It's always too late. It was too late for Charles. He died. No one helped him because he had a record. No one believed him.
It's not too late, Molly.
Don't, Randy. Don't.
Killing will help, won't it? One man's death will bring back those 14 years, won't it? It'll make everything all right. Oh, sure. An eye for an eye. That's why the whole world is going blind. Kill or be killed. Live in a jungle.
Shut up.
Join the pack, Molly. Run with the jackals. You're crying, Molly. Why? Why?
Let me alone, Randy.
Molly, I'm going to the phone and I'm going to call the police.
No, don't.
You can shoot if you want to.
Oh, please. Please don't, Randy.
Take your choice, Molly. Be like those two who just left, or be yourself.
I know what I want. What I've waited for.
Yes, 14 years you've waited. It's a long time, Molly, a long time to build up an act of violence. One that can't bring back a single day or change a minute that's gone past. You've got what you want. Those three men live in fear and hatred, mistrust and suspicion. Now tonight you gave them in 1 hour the bitterest pill they could swallow, the realization that they've wasted 14 years. You didn't, you knew. That 1 hour is all you need. Go ahead and shoot if you want to, Molly. Hello, get me the police, quickly.
All right, Randy. All right.
Welcome back, Molly. Well, there's the story of Molly Keller in 14 years, but it's more than that. It's a story of people. Mix them up all you want, put them in any situation, and what they do depends on what they are inside. You can't change that. Maybe it's all to the good. Gives a guy a starting point when he begins to wonder how things will turn out for all of us. Copy, boy.
Thank you.
Nightbeat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis and edited by Larry Marcus. Tonight's transcribed story was written by Russell Hughes, with music by Frank Wirth. The part of Molly was played by Sarah Selby. Others in tonight's cast were Joan Banks, Wilms Herbert, Peter Leeds, Wally Mayer, and George Offerman, Jr. Listen next week at this time and every week as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness.
And this is the Wheaties man, Frank Martin, inviting you to listen also on Tuesday, that's tomorrow night, to the Penny Singleton Show on the Wheaties Big Parade. See you then.
Forest fires aren't born, they're made. 9/10 of all forest fires in this country are touched off by the carelessness of forest travelers. Don't you be one of the guilty persons who kindle 9 out of 10 forest fires. Follow these simple rules for woodland traveling. Carefully crush out all cigarette, cigar, and pipe ashes. Break all matches in two after using. Double-check campfires by drenching them twice with water. Always find out the law before using fire in the forest. Nightbeat came to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Nightbeat on Tuned to Yesterday from July 17th, 1950 on NBC. And that brings to a close this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.